Hey, everybody, just a quick word before we get started with this week's episode. What better gift to get the Air Raid fan in your life but two t-shirts and a poster from the Air Raid podcast? That's right. Go to air-raid.net, follow the instructions on the merch tab, and purchase a couple for your lover or your friend. It's a great gift. Also, you can donate to the show, $5, $10, whatever, $100, $100 million, to help us out, get some more equipment that we need here in Dining Room Studios. All right, happy holidays, everybody. Enjoy. Well, hello and welcome, everyone.
Hail to the king, baby.
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast.
Are you off your fucking meds or something?
This is episode 124.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series.
Maybe it's time for me to get a better duty.
I am your host, Aaron Roden.
I'd like to have a little informal chat with you, okay?
And yes, of course, this is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Once a week. And this week, going up a little bit late. I apologize. This happens sometimes. This usually should be up on Monday. But yeah. It's going up late Monday night. Sorry, folks. I've been sick. Maybe we'll talk about. Nobody wants to hear about me just being sick, right? Through the holiday season, through Thanksgiving. Man, that sucked. I couldn't taste anything. I couldn't taste the turkey. I will say this. My grandma had a new, like, recipe or something for turkey this year, and I could taste that turkey. That turkey was phenomenal. Never had a turkey that moist before. I know a lot of people hate that word, moist, but you know what? When you're describing good turkey, there's no other... What are you going to say? The turkey meat was wet? No, you don't say that. You don't say that. That's stupid. Get over it, people. Welcome. Welcome, everyone. I hope your Thanksgivings were great, or, you know, whatever you celebrate. Is there another holiday that people celebrate? I don't know. It's not really a religious holiday, right? It's just an American holiday. I hope it was great. Mine was a little off. I'm a very traditional guy. I know I've said that many times on this show. I like being around family. And I like the tradition of being around said family. I also like drinking a lot on this. But I was sick. I was so sick, you guys. I've been sick for like a week. Then my parents got sick. And so we go to my grandparents' house in the northern parts of Washington. And they got a nice house up there, nice kitchen to do all the cooking. And a bunch of people didn't come this year. Because people were sick. So we didn't get... We usually get together and we play a poker game. And we didn't play the poker game because nobody really felt like it. People left early that were there. And then my parents weren't there. Man, kind of stunk, man. But it was great. It was great, you know, nonetheless. We got some leftovers. Thank you, Grandma. I hope you guys all had a great one. Now... When we do Thanksgiving, everybody, it's like kind of like a potluck. Everybody has to make something, right? I don't know how you guys out there in podcast land do it. But so Mairead and I got tasked with making a dessert. However, this fell squarely on Mairead's shoulders, rest assured, right? So Mairead made I just sniffed a little bit. I will try not to do that too much throughout this process. Mairead had this idea of making this pumpkin cheesecake, which she has made before, and it's just fantastic. And she makes the whole thing from scratch. It's amazing. It's great. So she makes this thing and puts it in this pan, and it turns out this pan has like a hole in it, and it's like seeping this like maple syrupy kind of stuff from the crust, and it gets all in the bottom of the in the oven, right? Well, first of all, we didn't even know it was there yet. But we take it over to my grandparents' house, a big hit. And then in the car, we notice that it it seeped out this syrup stuff all over the passenger seat in the car. Just gross. But it cleaned up. It's fine, right? Moving on. So we have, like, a couple days later on Saturday, we had a bunch of people over for a after Thanksgiving pizza party, and we had Andrew and Genevieve and Sean DeTore, Rachel Bell, Thunder from Stack of Dimes, and his lovely lady Anita over here, and Andy Hurst, and yeah, so. I thought it would be a great idea to make some pizzas, like homemade pizzas, right? And so we get everybody over here. We're all drinking, being merry. And we put a couple of the first pizzas in. And apparently that stuff from the cheesecake dripped all down onto the bottom of the oven. And now it's just smoking. It's filling our place up, our house, up with smoke. And it's just billowing out of the oven. And so we have to open all the doors, all the windows, everything. You know, for the most part, I'm embarrassed that this is happening in my place. I want everybody to be having a good time. Nobody seemed put out by it, but it smelled bad. If, like, you've ever burnt, like, some sort of sugary substance, right? It's like almost smells like somebody's freebasing crack cocaine or something like that. Anyway, so it gets real smoky in here. We kind of air everything out. Everything's fine after a little while, but we have to make three pizzas, so it's kind of a long process. But next day rolls around. Everybody had a good time, I hope. Next day rolls around, and I get the wise idea to do the clean setting on the oven, right? I've never done this before, so I don't know what to expect. Now, apparently, you're supposed to go in there. If there's a lot of residue in there, you're probably supposed to go wipe it down first, get some of that bigger stuff out of there. Well, I didn't want to do that. I'm not into the elbow grease. But anyway, so I start this thing up, and it gets, like, the cleaning setting just, like, superheats the whole oven, right? It, like, heats it up to, like, 400, 500 degrees, I don't know. But it goes on for like 4 hours. So this thing's running for about half an hour. And smoke is just pouring out of the top of this thing. Even though the door is locked on it, it's just pouring smoke out, just spitting smoke out. And our place gets even smokier than the night before. And I'm starting to get a little bit lightheaded. And so I go around and, you know, I'm starting to get a little bit nervous about this because it does. It smells like somebody's freebasing something in my home. I mean, you could possibly use like a whole bunch of ovens on a cleaning setting as like smoke bombs in a war or something like that. Like pretty much my oven has now been outlawed by the Geneva Convention, I think. If I could spit that joke out. Blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so it's getting real bad inside. So we open up all the windows. My daughter's taking a nap, and I didn't even really think about it, but you know, we took all the fire alarm, the smoke alarm things down, like good parents, took the batteries out and stuff. And Mairead goes and she goes to the gym. So I'm just kind of sitting here with this thing, and it's just billowing and billowing and billowing smoke out. So finally, you know, I'm like, okay, this is enough. We got to shut this thing down. We shut the oven off. But I'm getting a little bit nervous because I was a little bit lightheaded, right? Before I opened up all the doors and stuff. And so then it pops into my head. I was like, whoa, dude, Tatum hasn't made a peep yet. Maybe we should go check on her. So I slowly creep into her room. It doesn't smell in her room, so thank God. But I can't tell if she's breathing or not. And so now I'm kind of freaking out. I can't see her chest rising. So I have to go down real slowly because I don't want to wake her up, right? I'm a good parent, I guess. And I go down and I feel her chest, and her chest is moving. She's still got a pulse. Okay, great, great. So I slowly kind of back out of the room. But is that like good parenting or bad parenting if I don't want to risk, you know, having my child die, but I also don't want to wake her up from a nap that she so desperately needs at this certain point in the day. Oh, man. Anyway, so we aired everything out. Everything's good now, but not going to use that cleaning function on the oven anytime soon. And now I think all my clothes just reek of that weird, weird chemical, like, burning sugar smell. Gross, man. Gross. Note to self, make sure the pan that you're using to make a dessert does not have holes in it. Okay? Future. That's a lesson for future Aaron. Okay, everybody. I think I've bored you enough. We've got a great show today. Duncan Trussell, very, very funny comedian, is going to be joining me here. We recorded this down at Laugh Hole a couple days ago, and it was super, super good. You know, a lot of it was kind of an ode to Tristan Devon, the late Tristan Devon down there at Laugh Hole, because, you know, he was the guy behind getting all these comedians on. He lined up Duncan Trussell to come on this show on the Air Raid podcast, and he also did all the Laugh Holes. He put all those together along with Kevin Hyder. And very funny, John Keister emceed the show and had a very touching story about Tristan before the show started. And but yeah, so we went down to Laugh Hole at Chop Suey here in Seattle and talked with Duncan about the multiverse and a lot of different stuff. I mean, this guy just blew my mind, guys. This guy blew my mind. Great conversation. Duncan Trussell. We're going to be featuring music today by the band The Local Natives. And I hope you guys enjoy this, because I know I do. Anyway, yeah, let's just get to it. I've talked too much, haven't I? This is Local Natives. The song is Wide Eyes. We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us. Duncan Trussell coming up.
Oh,
All right, welcome back, everybody. That was Local Natives with the song Wide Eyes, and sitting here joining me on the Air Raid podcast is Duncan Trussell.
Hi.
How's it going, man?
Great.
You're like a vocal wizard.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Well, so I've been listening. I've been listening a lot to your show.
Cool.
In pseudo prep for
awesome.
For this little conversation
Thank
that we're
you.
Gonna have, and I find that a lot of your like, and I you know I apologize, but I haven't seen a lot of your stand up, so I don't know exactly what you know what that's like, what that experience is. But listening to your show, the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, is like a whole, like, maybe hour and a half, 2 hours of just extreme stream of consciousness.
Yes. Yeah, that's
so what that's what
is.
I mean by vocal wizard.
Oh, cool.
You practice the art of vocal wizardry.
I'll take any kind of wizard I can get. I'll be any kind of wizard. That's awesome.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing that, man?
The podcast?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I started off doing podcasts with Natasha Leggero. We had a when we were dating, we had a podcast together called The Lavender Hour. And we did that for, I think a little more, almost 2 years maybe, or a year and a half. I can't remember. Sporadically, though, not consistently. And then after we went our separate ways, I started doing my own podcast. And so I think we're up to 49 episodes.
49 episodes.
Yeah.
And how often do you do it?
About once a week. Sometimes twice a week, but
okay,
once a week.
Okay. It gets kind of hard, doesn't it?
Well, when you're going on the road, it does.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it's tough to like balance everything out. And I like to spend a lot of time editing the podcast.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, adding stuff in the beginning, so it's sort of it gets complicated, but I love doing it so much. Like everything else feels like secondary to the podcast. I just
right.
love doing the podcast.
Right. Yeah. I mean, do you do the same thing I do? Like in the beginning of the month, you just line up a whole bunch of guests to come on and then just, you know, bang out like four episodes or something like that for the month and just put them up or what?
Yeah. Well, when I'm in town for a while, I'll do that. But when I'm not in town for a while, it's very kind of, you know, things just kind of happen by luck and more than organization. And I don't know if I'm ascribing, some kind of mystical component to just being disorganized, but there's something I like about stumbling into interviews or suddenly being contacted by people randomly and then like it just happens.
Right. That's what I like about doing this show, because I don't like I said, I don't do a lot of research.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
For guests that come on. So it's always like a really cool experience to like learn who somebody is.
Research is a funny thing, and also learning who somebody is a funny thing, because when you're learning who somebody is, really what you're learning is little like nodules of information that sort of mesh together to form the story of who a person is.
Right.
But the thing that is interesting is like what's behind those nodes of information. Thing, you know? And the more like you can create a situation where that thing comes out, it's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, that's what, because with my podcast, it's the same thing. Like when I have someone on, I don't, unless it's like somebody who I'm extremely nervous around or somebody who I like Graham Hancock or someone like that, who is Graham Hancock is this incredible author who wrote this book called Fingerprints of the Gods about the idea that humans have been around on the planet much, much longer than what they currently teach in schools. And he's done ayahuasca hundreds of times, and he's just this brilliant intellect. So in those cases, I just go into interview mode and do research. And because I am.
Do you get in a case like that? Because we just had a very renowned author on this show as well, Charles R. Cross. And I was really fucking nervous to have him on the show. Because, like, you know, he's an intellectual.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, and if you don't have your stuff straight, which I didn't.
Yeah.
Like, he just, you know, he mows you down throughout the episode and is like, no, actually, that's not right.
Which is okay. Let him mow you down. Sometimes it's fun to get mowed
down.
No,
it's fun
to
listen to, definitely. Yeah. Well, hey, let's switch gears here for a second. So, like I said, I've been listening to a lot of your shows, and one thing that comes up a lot in your episodes is the multiverse.
Yes.
And will you explain the multiverse to me?
Sure.
I think I have a working knowledge of what that is.
Sure.
Like, there's this episode of Futurama where I don't know if you watch that show, But they go to the edge of the universe, and there's this little brick wall, and then there's a little like a viewfinder, binoculars that you can pay 5 cents to look through.
Yes.
And they look through it, and then there they are. In some other universe,
oh, yes.
Looking back at them, but they all have cowboy hats on.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I mean, it's this. The idea is that sort of the perception of time is an illusion that is based on our neurology, and that everything's kind of happening at once. And when not just everything's happening at once, every single possibility is happening at once. So.
In different dimensions?
Yeah, all exactly on top of this dimension at the very same time. So
okay.
We exist in this fabulously, a fabulously complex universe in the sense that it's expressing itself in every possible way. And so what that means is that if you begin to understand that time is an illusion, then that means that your ancestors are still alive. And so all of a sudden, like just in this particular timeline, we're in ancestor worship suddenly starts making a little bit more sense because
right.
Everything's happening exactly at the same time, which means that
one dimension rather, like my great, great grandfather could still be living.
Is still living. I mean,
the idea is
like at this very single moment.
Because something else happened, like a butterfly effect in that universe, where like they figure out how to make people live past the age of like 200.
Yeah, there's a great quote in the Bhagavad Gita. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita that goes, it's really kind of esoteric and weird, but it's like I'm going to butcher it, but it's something like everything that has always been, and nothing that does not exist will ever come into being. So the idea is that all things are eternal, but the illusion of time creates this sense of cessation.
Uh-huh.
But what we're composed of is never goes away. And science, you know, articulates that. What is it? The fourth law? I don't know which law of thermodynamics it is, but it's like, energy cannot be created or destroyed.
Right, right.
So the idea is that what you are is an eternal, you're composed of eternal components that have always been and will never cease to exist. And that because we have this illusion of time, it gives us this impression that we have form. And if you fast forward the universal VCR by just 100 years per second, then suddenly you realize that you don't exist at all. You're just a combination of a bunch of elements that have temporarily come together, and in 100 years you're going to be some decomposing mulch. But then if you were to fast forward that times a billion years a second, then that decomposing mulch, since we have seen that inanimate matter can from time to time spring into animate matter, it only makes logical sense that that stuff that you're composed of will reanimate again in some other form. And now if we...
So you never truly die.
You never... Well, no.
Right?
And you never really... Yeah, exactly. You never truly die. And maybe, yeah, that's it. You never are really born. There's just the illusion of death and rebirth. And that's called... in Buddhism, they call that dependent origination, which is that nothing exists without some other thing bringing that thing into existence.
Whoa.
So it's badass, man. So multiverse theory is this idea combined with the idea that not only is this particular timeline happening, but every single possible timeline is happening. And the way that you can turn that crazy hippie idea into something that's actionable is you start playing around with the idea of like, okay, well, aside from the idea that in some universe right now, in some alternate dimension, I have 17 giant cocks that are being sucked by squids. Aside from like fun ideas like that, there's another cool idea that's more down to earth, which is like, there's some version of me that I want to be. That's already existing in the multiverse, some more perfect version of me, some version of me where I have the money that I'd like to be making. I have the girlfriend I'd like to have.
Yeah.
I'm experiencing whatever the particular thing your karma is drawing you into.
Yeah.
That thing is already existing right now. That person is already in existence right now.
Okay. So so what happens when you die then? Like in one string? Do you bounce to the next string?
Well, that's a...
Do you enter the consciousness of, like, your other dimensional self?
Well, man, if I could fucking answer that, man, I'd be a goddamn cult leader, probably.
But you could be, man.
I have fun,
you could be.
I have fun theories about that.
Yeah.
Fun theories about that. And because, like, the idea of reincarnation is people understand it as it's like the New Age story of reincarnation is hilarious. And that is that you die...
And you become somebody else.
Well, but before you even become somebody else, you get to spend time in some kind of weird, like, interstellar vacation place where you get to kind of contemplate the lessons that you learned in this life. And then over time, as you're in whatever paradise planet.
Is there a pool bar?
Oh, whatever you want, man. The way they describe it is it's just fucking everything makes sense. Some people say it's like when you smoke DMT, you go into this, like, crazy DMT realm where these hyperdimensional creatures are just blasting you with love, and that's where you go to when you die. But I have a more sinister idea of what might happen when you die, which is far worse than oblivion. Because a lot of people, you know, the atheists, they have this amazing ghost story that they like to tell to try to rattle your cage, and they're like, when you die, there's nothing. Nothing. And it's like they try
and
to
that's fucking scary.
No, that's the best, man. That's
the best.
First of all, that's heaven. Number one, for someone who's never experienced nothing to suddenly be talking about some infinite nothingness is no different than someone who's never experienced angels yapping about pearly gates and golden roads. It's like, number one thing you know for sure, you've never experienced nothing.
No, you can't because you can never totally shut your brain off. That's why I've never successfully been able to meditate.
Oh, shit, I'm sure. You just probably have, like, made meditation into something that it's not. A lot of people think meditation is something that... Meditation is a... You've definitely meditated. Meditation is not this lofty, fucking robed, incense-burning, Shaolin monk slowing your heartbeat down at all. It's much more practical.
So what do you experience when you meditate? Do you meditate?
Yeah, I meditate.
On a regular basis? You chant.
I chant a Buddhist mantra.
No shit.
Yeah, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. I chant this Buddhist mantra when I'm being, like, disciplined. I'll chant it every day, sometimes twice a day. And what I experience when I'm doing that chant is you get this amazing light that shines on the reactive mind. So, because our minds are always just... They've been compared to, like, a crazy monkey in a cage that's just chittering and screaming. And you can just sit back and, like, basically meditation is creating all forms of meditation are creating different ways for you to distance yourself from that monkey mind.
So that you're
able to, like, really watch the insane chattering of your mind. And when you're meditating, you go in and out of, like, being completely fixated on your thoughts. Like, and your mind will be like, oh my God, why the fuck did you say that to her? Did you really say that to her? Why did you say that to her? And then nam-myoho-renge-kyo, oh God, dude, we are fucked. You got to pay that fucking IRS check, dude. And then the more you listen, the more you realize, like, oh my God, this voice never stops.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've confused that voice as me. Like, a lot of people think that voice is them. They think they're the crazy monkey voice, but the monkey voice is just like a neurological power line sort of skittering around inside your brain. And meditation gives you a chance to sort of distance yourself from that enough to recognize that, oh, I don't have to react to an insane maniac, what's left of my proto-hominid self that's still raging in the forest of my brain, you know, dying for all forms of sense gratification. And you won't stay in that peaceful place. You'll zap right back in and be screaming at a fucking asshole in traffic or be like in a fight with your girlfriend because it doesn't go away. Yeah.
It never goes away.
And the impression that you're going to, like, in this particular incarnation, you're going to make that go away is a real... It's really setting yourself up for trouble.
Right.
But meditation is just a something that's been turned into something a bit more mystical than it really is. It's just a real simple thing. You can just sit down in any chair in your house and turn off your phone and just listen to your breath, and There, you're meditating.
Not going to happen, man.
It's amazing, isn't it? I know. We got to keep
moving. I can't put my phone down, man. My phone's awesome.
I know, dude. Mine too.
Yeah. I got a Twitter feed I got to
take care of. We got to keep moving, bud. We got to keep moving. But to answer your question about the death thing, when I was studying Buddhism when I was much younger,
where were you studying Buddhism?
My fucking mom's house, reading books. And then in college, I studied Zen. But I would always, in the beginning, I would think, my God, man, these people must hate life because their idea is that through disciplining yourself and coming to an awareness of your true identity, you can escape the cycle of birth and death called samsara, wheel.
Right.
And I would always think, why would you want to escape that? Don't you want to be immortal? Why would you want to escape the cycle of birth and death? Wouldn't you want to live forever? Isn't it fun to be alive? And then the older you get, the more you realize, like, oh, this could probably get a little trying after 16 trillion incarnations. And so this idea popped into my head, which is that...
But only if you realize that you've been reincarnated 16 trillion times.
Well, this is
right.
Well, the idea is the momentum that you carry with you in this life carries on into the next life, only it doesn't have attached to it all the nodes of information that make up yourself, but the innate sort of momentum of your being still carries on through whatever the next. A way to look at it is kind of like you're a radio. Your body, your meat body, is like a meat antenna.
I've heard you say this before.
It's a meat antenna, you're picking up consciousness. And when the antenna dies, when your radio breaks, the radio transmission doesn't stop. The radio transmission would just pop into another radio. So my spooky idea about reincarnation is that maybe when you die, you don't start as a baby.
Yeah.
You know, maybe as you
just get transferred.
Bam! You're just all of a sudden you're a fucking cab driver in New York having a midlife crisis, and for a second you have this weird deja vu, like what the fuck?
Right.
You know, and then that
could be what deja vu is, right? When you experience it yourself, you could either be taking on another consciousness, or your consciousness could be entering this new body that you've never actually been in.
That's it.
But you have the memory.
That's it.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's fucking crazy.
That's crazy and terrifying to think about, you know?
Yeah,
And so now all of a sudden it's like ceaseless incarnations over the course of infinity. And now you begin to realize if there is a way to transcend this insane ping-ponging from one life to the next for infinity, it certainly would be worth looking into.
Right, yeah. So what got you into this? What started like your interest in this kind of stuff? Because it sounds like, I mean, you've done a lot of reading on the subject.
Yeah.
Obviously. You've expanded your mind on many different substances, I take
acid. LSD, there was an LSD boom in the 90s. That helped a lot.
How old are you?
LSD. I'm 38.
You're 38?
Yeah.
I went through that.
That there was an undocumented acid boom, and that, praise God for that. Like, it was just so helpful for so many of us.
You ever have a bad trip?
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. I've had several bad trips, miserable, brutal trips.
I had one that kind of steered me clear of things.
Steered you clear of taking psychedelics?
And I didn't take psychedelics again for, I don't know, maybe a year or something like that. But, I would, dabble in mushrooms. Here and there. But yeah, the acid, I don't know if I ever did that again.
You got to be careful with it, man. I mean, it's
chemistry.
It's a nuclear bomb, man. You can't just like toy around with it, though. I certainly toyed around with it. Oh no, I there's a great, I mean, I do from time to time, I'll take mushrooms, but when I do it, I'm very careful about it. But there's a Alan Watts quote that I really like where he says, once you get the message, hang up the phone.
Hang up the phone.
You know?
That's perfect. Because it's totally true, man. Like, if you get a bad one, then you're always going to be worrying about that bad one, right? When you do it again.
Well, if you get a bad...
Right? And that can fuck you. That can mess you up.
MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, has a group. They don't call trips bad trips. They call trips challenging trips.
Uh-huh.
And if you've set yourself up in the right situation, then you'll always find that the things that are haunting you are just projections of aspects of yourself that you haven't completely assimilated. And they're forming they're showing themselves in the form of your fear of death. Maybe they're showing yourself themselves in your inability to love, or like they're in the way that they're sort of manifesting as these goblins and skulls or whatever the fucking thing is. Or maybe you just think you're dying, or maybe you feel like you're you know, that life is pointless and meaningless, or maybe you're just hitting all these things that are really important things that in a healthy society would be things that were taught to children, you know.
Right.
But we're so, this society is so nerfed that, you know, right now I'm sure that in a 4 mile proximity to where we're sitting right now, there's easily 100 corpses, you know, know, just so many dead bodies. But you never see a dead body in the West. You never see, and when you do see it, it's like, oh God, I saw a dead body, because they hide death from us. You know, we hide death from ourselves.
Do you think that's why people are so, and this works perfectly with the next topic that I wanted to talk to you about. Actually, you know what? Let's do this first. Let's come back to this. We need to go to our second musical break. We're featuring music by the band Local Natives on this episode. This song is called Breakers, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
Yes.
Still by Duncan Trussell, the wizard of vocalization.
God,
or what did I say? Vocal wizard.
Vocal wizard. I feel like I have just a raspy lesbian voice. When
a lesbian that's been smoking for years on
squawking. It's called vocal frying. Somebody told me that's what it's called.
You know who you should hang out with? You should hang out with, what's her name? That channel's Ramtha. J.K. Knight?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it, what's her name? Do you know?
I know what you're talking about.
J.R. Knight?
Yeah, I know something what you're talking about. Yeah. I don't, you know, as much as I wouldn't seem like it, I'm a bit skeptical about some of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, big time.
And, all, you know, I heard Ram Dass say this awesome thing where he's like, just because a being is disembodied doesn't mean it's telling the truth.
Yeah, it's some 90-year-old guy that died, you know, and he just, like, hung around. And
what? Just because you're a ghost, suddenly you have wisdom? Yeah. Like, who cares?
No, here's the thing, is that this guy, he had a very boring life. He collected comic books for a majority of it, and he wanted to do, in death, he wanted to do something spectacular. So he embodied a woman here in Seattle named J.K. Knight or whatever her name is, and called himself Ramtha.
Yeah, Ramtha. And it's you know, it's an amazing thing because it's, there's a professor in my college and I'll never forget, like, his main message was that you know, you can get information out of anything.
Yeah.
You know, like the, they have that new straw, that you can basically just stick in sewer water.
Yeah. Right.
So you can become that, a filter.
Isn't it called the life straw?
So you can become a life straw for information, and you can, like, get really good at filtering out. Because I'm sure I know things that Ramtha talks about are pretty good. There's some good points in there, and you can, like, extrapolate those points. The main thing is like, with all this stuff, is like, what's actionable?
Right,
what can you take out of stuff with information that you can actually, like, turn into action? Because if you're not turning information into action, then you really are just sort of like doing heroin in a weird way. Like, we're all kind of mainlining information,
right,
but that's all we're doing, is taking in the information, and then we're not converting that into action. It's the things get really cool when you get the information and then you turn it into action. That's where life starts getting really great.
Well, I want to go back to this point that we left off on. You were talking about, like, at any given point, there are, you know, 100 dead bodies in a 4-mile radius to where you
especially
are at one point.
Especially around my house.
You look like Charles Manson. If you only had just a little swastika tattooed on
your
forehead.
Stop flattering me.
That's what I'm saying, man. You could be a cult leader if you wanted to.
Well, anyone could, man, because you know what? Anyone could be a cult leader because, you know, the sad thing is that people are addicted to leaders in this culture, and people always, and it's such a S&M thing to be able to just release your fucking bowels, so to speak, and just become a big baby and think that some other person is going to lead you. And it's a lazy thing, and it has gotten us into so much trouble that it's just, this whole fucking leader thing has got to stop. It's like, once there's a leader, then it's like, Then you end up like worshiping.
You take away the personal responsibility.
Yeah,
right?
And you ignore the truth, which is like, you ignore, like, the real truth of what human identity is, which is that, I mean, what I consider to be the truth of human identity, which is that we're all part of the same thing, you know? And you've raised this person up above everyone else, and here's the one who's going to lead us, or here's the one with the great information, you're like basically compartmentalizing the entire universe into this one, you know, sinewy fuck who more than likely just wants to, like, fist teenagers. You know?
Vocal wizardry.
Thank you, friend.
So how do you roll all this stuff into being a comic? Because like, somebody like yourself with a mind like yours, I don't associate with being a comedian.
Me either.
Or somebody in the entertainment industry.
No, I mean, it's something that, like, I wrestle with because I love doing stand-up comedy. It's such a blast. But stand-up comedy in this form that's happening right now, these are two different forms. You can't get on stage and just sort of ramble without
the multiverse.
Yeah, because you need, like, stand-up people, when they come to a show, they want to laugh. They want punchlines. They want, like,
right.
So stand-up comedy is a kind of a form of, like, taking this stuff and then freebasing it into something that's like
consumable
and, yeah. And fast. It's the with stand-up comedy, it's like there's only 45 minutes to do it, and but it's something that I'm really like right now, like really like kind of simultaneously frustrated and excited and challenged to figure out ways to like take this version of me and meld it together with the comedian version of me to like and see what that comes out
yeah,
as.
Yeah. So what started it for you? Like what where did you start doing stand up?
The Comedy Store. Well, I was.
You just felt like on a whim one time you just needed to get up on stage and talk to people or what?
No, I moved to LA and I needed a job. So I had seen the Comedy Store. I've been funny my whole life as a defense mechanism. So I thought it'd be fun to work at a comedy club. And at the time, I didn't know too much about stand up comedy outside of, you know, contact with like my dad's Bill Cosby album, that kind of stuff. And I'd always been like blown away. You know, I would memorize jokes when I was a kid. I would like memorize joke after joke after joke and then sit on the school bus and like tell jokes that I'd memorized from Truly Tasteless Jokes, these garish stock jokes. And like, but I never had the confidence to be like, I'm going to be a comedian when I grow up. Right, and if I'd even said that around my parents, I'd be like, shut up. What are you talking about? No one does that. So I ended up coming to LA and I got this job at the Comedy Store, and the Comedy Store is kind of like Hogwarts for comedians. Speaking of wizards, it's this bizarre academy for stand-up comics, and it's a very dark place, because stand-up comedy is an art that you learn from rejection, not acceptance. So it's
because you're making fun of yourself. Right.
Well,
for the flaws in yourself.
Well, you're getting this instant feedback from your. I mean, like when imagine if like painters, when they were painting, their canvas could heckle them.
Right.
You know, or their canvas could be like, what the fuck are you doing? This is terrible. This is terrible. Like it would create a. It would create an interesting thing for better or for worse.
Yeah.
And so. Stand up comedy.
But that fingernail you drew is pretty good.
Pretty good. Whatever. Give it up. The message you get from the Comedy Store. Is mostly give it up. And then that's a strainer because you're only going to do stand-up comedy if you really love doing stand-up comedy, because it's years of just absolute poverty and rejection. Years. It's not it's years of like to get to a place where you can do it. It's brutal. It's a brutal craft.
So what is it? What is it for you then? What kept you going?
I fucking love it. I mean, and all my friends are comics, and I love funny people. I've only been friends with comedians now for probably, I don't know, going on 12 years. I've only dated comedians. I just love funny people, and I love the, and funny is just the wrong word for it anyway. Like, we like that word funny is such a stupid word because it's some other thing altogether. It's these.
Well, right. And that word too conjures up the thought that like comedians are always funny.
Oh,
like they're on all the time.
No,
right?
Comedians are very introspective, philosophical people who have like a kind of like a dark edginess to them, and what's really pleasant around being a comedian or the types of comedians I like is you're not going to offend them,
right?
You know, there's not going to be a moment where they're like, oh, what have you said? You know, like, because we're constantly shocking each other just for fun,
right?
So so there's something to me very liberating about hanging around comedians and being around comedians, and also there's something incredibly beautiful when you see somebody who's really mastered the art form on stage and has like become so good at combining sentences in a way that can induce like booming laughter. There's something really beautiful about it.
Totally. So do you think you're there yet?
Where?
At like the perfect point?
No! Fuck no, man. Oh, Jesus.
Do you think you'll ever be there?
I hope. I don't think, but look, I know like, the first comedian who started taking me on the road was Joe Rogan.
Oh,
and
really?
He's brilliantly funny, and he's like an incredible performer. And like, he'll say, like, what's so cool about him is like you realize he's just figuring it out. You know what I mean?
Right,
and and I've seen him for years and have always been like, man, that guy is so fucking great. And then he's like, I think I'm getting there, man. And like, so you realize that like there's never a, it's kind of like that Donovan song, and which is actually a Zen koan, I think, which is like, first there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is, which is that you're always like climbing to the top of a mountain, and when you're and when you reach that peak for a second, there's this plateau where you're like, I've done it, and then you look up and realize, oh my God, there's another mountain 50 times bigger than the mountain I just climbed. And then you get to the top of that, and then there's another one and another one. And that's the beauty, I think, of any art form, is
right,
that
right.
In the moment that you got to some fat piggy place where you're like, oh, I'm there. I'm really the artist now. I've done it. Wouldn't you be just a bag of
just shit?
Wouldn't you be the most appalling fuck? It's like, I don't want to figure it out, really, man. And I like the progression. I like the gnawing sense of like not being happy with where I'm at, which pushes me to try a little harder to get to a better place.
And
I like the whole process of it, and I simultaneously deplore it. You know what I mean? It's a torturously beautiful thing. It's like the greatest dominatrix of all time.
See, I just don't get it. I just don't get that. Like constantly being, you know, feeling like you have to climb more or something, you know? I don't know. And, you know, that takes place in the podcast world as well.
Sure.
Everybody wants to be on the iTunes charts and
right.
and climb those and get better numbers and stuff like that. But, I mean, the comedy world fascinates me. People like yourself fascinate me. Because you can get up on stage without a band or without a guitar, without something kind of guarding you from the audience, and you can stand there and tell jokes. And if it doesn't go well one night, you get up and do it again the next. You know?
Yeah. People say that.
I find it fascinating.
People are fascinated by that concept, and there's. I think that it is fascinating, and I think there's some. Smoke and mirrors in there, because you have to understand, you know, this is something that we've been doing
for so long that
over time
you build up a defense, basically, right?
Well, like,
I mean, like you were saying, like you don't take things personally.
Yeah, and you learn like that you begin to learn. There's a connectivity that you start learning, and there's like you it's just like it's just an endless progression, man. And like any comedians who are just starting out listening now, there's this cool thing that Bobby Lee, the comedian Bobby Lee, told my friend Ari, which Ari did, and he said to become funny on stage, you have to bomb 100 times.
Uh-huh.
And so like Ari made this awesome chart of 100 squares when he first started stand-up comedy, and every time he bombed, he would write down the date and the place.
Yeah.
And so you could look at this chart, and it was really cool because the bombs would be in like quick succession, you know, like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, bomb, 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 bomb. And then you kind of see this like this temporal space start opening up in between the bombs as he starts figuring it out. And it
becomes less and less as time goes on.
Yeah. So it's like that's kind of the beginning process of it. And then as you progress, you start becoming, you know, you start working on different facets of it, you know, like joke construction or connection with the audience or riffing. You know, there's so many different sides of the thing that you can decide to put your time into, or writing in the day, or there's so many. It's just it's an endlessly fulfilling thing if you like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I think on that note. We should close it down here.
Awesome.
Yeah, but thank you so much for talking
with
me.
Hell yeah, what
a
blast, man. This is
totally
so cool.
Fun.
Thank you.
High-fiving on mic right there.
Hare Krishna.
And you got anything coming up that you want to plug here?
I'm doing on December 21st, 2012, I'm going to record an album at the Laughing Skull in Atlanta. I'm doing, let's see.
The End of the World.
Yeah,
isn't that the date?
This is the tour I'm on. It's called It's Not the End of the World Tour. But with this shit happening in right now, so I'm starting to feel like that might be the wrong title.
Well, that's awesome though. So where are you going to be in the coming days here?
So I'm going to be, well, I mean, this probably won't go up in time, but I'm going to Portland tomorrow, and then I've just been to Austin, Houston, New Orleans, Montreal, Dallas, and I can't remember I've been on tour.
Yeah,
so this
is
kind of like the end of the first part of the tour that finishes off, and I have like a week and a half. I'm going to be in Austin, and not this weekend, but the weekend after Rogan.
Okay, yeah.
But that's just one day. So I kind of have like a week and a half at home. I can't fucking wait.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, smoke weed and play Borderlands too.
Hey, man, that's a fantastic game.
The best game.
Oh, man. Shit, I wish I would have known you were a gamer. Then we could have talked about that too.
Well,
fuck.
Let's
do this again.
Okay, we'll do it again.
Yeah, let's do this again. You come to Seattle periodically.
I love it here.
Yeah.
So next time, we'll do it again.
We'll do it again.
Okay,
we'll play some video games that time, too.
Beautiful.
All right, buddy.
Okay.
Hey, this is Local Natives. This song's called Airplanes. Thank you so much for listening to the Air Raid Podcast, episode 124. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye. So much I call